Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, Epic Days for America's Financial System. Epic as in Wall Street in full-on crisis. Companies at its heart unraveling. Lehman Brothers, history. Number One, iBank, Investment Bank, Merrill Lynch in a rescue sale. The federal government trying not to put more public money on the line. But who knows where this goes? Stock markets reeling. This hour, On Point, historic crisis on Wall Street. You can join the conversation. What do you see going on here? How do we stop the bleeding? How did the billionaires get it so wrong? And who will take the hit? Joining me first from Washington, just off a train from New York, been reporting all night, John Hilsenrath, chief economics correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So, state of play at the moment. Can you tick off what stands where at the end of this historic weekend?
All eyes are really on the financial markets. This morning, we had historic changes in our financial system this weekend, and we have to see how the markets are digesting. The last I checked, it looked like the Dow was down in the 300-point range. And to tell you the truth, given what we've just been through, if we get through the day in that realm, it won't be a total disaster. These are epic events that we're experiencing, and a 300-point drop, I think we could breathe a sigh of relief if that's all that comes out of this.
But where the markets will be by day's end, anybody's guess at this point. Here was Alan Greenspan yesterday with George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week, former Federal Reserve chairman, saying events on Wall Street were indeed of historic proportions. Here's Greenspan first, John.
Let's recognize that this is a once-in-a-half-century, probably once-in-a-century type of event.
Is it the worst you've ever seen in your career?
Oh, by far. There's no question that this is in the process of outstripping anything I've seen, and it still is not resolved, and it still has a way to go.
John Hilsenrath, chief economics correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. So Lehman Brothers headed for bankruptcy. Merrill Lynch bought by a kind of rescue purchase by Bank of America. More big banks and insurer AIG, the big insurer, Washington Mutual, WAMU, in trouble, scrambling as well. What can you tell us about those, John?
Well, just to take a step back, I wanted to reflect for a second on what the former Fed chairman was just saying. As I was watching all these events unfold this weekend, the chairman was talking about historic proportions. It felt almost to me like what I was witnessing was Wall Street's version of the Battle of Gettysburg. You had the battlefield changing constantly, literally every hour. One moment Barclays is in negotiations to take over Lehman, and then it walks away, and Bank of America is in the middle of it, and then it turns around and buys Merrill Lynch. We had a very fast-changing battlefield, and we also had players, the generals, people like Hank Paulson and Tim Geithner and Ben Bernanke at the Fed, who had staked out really historic positions about how far they were willing to go, and were willing to follow those through the weekend.
John, at the heart of this, looking at that aspect, as you say, Geithner, president of the New York Federal Reserve, and of course Paulson, head of the Treasury. There was, I guess, a kind of game of chicken going on here. Wall Street really wanted to be bailed out this weekend or have some kind of bailout federal money put into this, and they didn't get it.
There was certainly we've used the term a game of chicken. Authorities have been wrestling with how to handle these situations ever since Bear Stearns, and they basically have two choices. One is moral hazard, and the other is financial hazard. The idea of moral hazard is that if you rescue one firm, then everyone else is going to expect to be rescued in the future. And that's exactly the way Wall Street came into the weekend. The potential buyers of Lehman Brothers didn't want to do a deal unless they had federal assistance. The other choice that you have to make is financial hazard, because if you don't lend a hand, then you run the risk of widespread market disruptions. I think what the Fed decided to do was to draw a circle around Lehman Brothers and say, we're not going to bail this firm out. We're not in the bailout business. We did Bear Stearns for a set of reasons that weren't in place this time. But we are going to protect the stability of the financial system. That is our duty. And as a result, at the end of the day, you know, I talk about the battlefield changing. You know, after all of this transpired, the Fed did take steps to try to stabilize the market. They've expanded their lending facilities to try to give the rest of Wall Street a little bit more breathing room in the next few days.
John, what are the fears on Wall Street and beyond about where this could go? Is there any sense that it's over or nearing the end? What's the scale of risk that remains in events?
I would say it's certainly not over, but, you know, the traders always look for these final washouts before you could start seeing an upturn. I don't know if this, you know, and in fact, the Russian crisis of 1998 was that kind of final washout. But our housing market has a long way to go before it has sorted out its problems. Our banks have a long way to go before they've sorted out their bad debt problems. I don't think the situation is resolved by any stretch, and I don't think policymakers see it that way either. What, you know, the big question is, are the markets going to be able to handle the next few days in an orderly way, or does it become disorderly? If it's orderly, I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief. From the policymakers' point of view, you know, there are a few worries. There's a worry that, you know, with Lehman Brothers going into liquidation, all of a sudden a lot of bad assets are going to hit Wall Street and force new sales of distressed assets, which could push prices even lower, kind of exacerbate the problems that have already happened. But as I say, the policymakers have taken steps to try to add liquidity to the market to settle things down, and we'll have to see if those steps work over the course of the next few days.
Just as big as it gets here on Wall Street over the weekend. John Hilzenrath, just off a train from New York, chief economics correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure thing.
And John, up all night there reporting on these events that have just astounded this country's financial community and the world. You can see that in the markets today. With me now from Washington, Vincent Reinhardt. He was director of the Federal Reserve Board's Division of Monetary Affairs from 2001 to 2007, now at the American Enterprise Institute. Vincent Reinhardt, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
And with me in the studio, Alan Sinai, chief global economist, strategist, and president of Decision Economics. He spent 15 years at Lehman Brothers, where he was chief global economist and managing director of Lehman Brothers Global Economics. Alan Sinai, thank you for joining us.
Hiya, Tom and Vince. How are you?
Lehman Brothers veteran, you are, sitting here. Your thoughts this morning. It's gone, going. Bankrupt.
Well, it's Chapter 11. Mm-hmm. That's a reorganization, bankruptcy. Subsidiaries will still operate, but from the point of view of the way you describe it, yeah, they're gone, and Merrill Lynch is absorbed. We're not through yet. The financial system's going through a major downsizing, consolidation. In light of a recession, financial crisis, financial turmoil, it will not be the same as what we have seen it. We're not through yet. Too many firms, balance sheets too expanded, and a lot more trouble to work our way through. It looks like the commercial banks are the survivors, at least the umbrella of commercial banking and the investment bank umbrella. This is the aftermath of the end of Glass-Steagall. The investment banks did not take over the commercial banking world. We have lots of other financial institutions, insurance companies, the backers of insurance companies. We think a worldwide recession going on, so we are a long way from through all of the problems.
Vincent Reinhardt, I cannot recall in my aware lifetime ever seeing or reading headlines like I'm seeing today. You know, the kind of superlatives about the extent and potential depth of this crisis. Put it in some kind of historic dimension for us.
Oh, I think it's unique in the U.S. experience. I think you do have to go back, as Chairman Greenspan talked about over the weekend, to the Great Depression. I think there's also international perspective that's useful. Remember that Japan had a lost decade in the 1990s, where it was a wrenching financial crisis that again started with overinflated land prices. So we're not alone. This is not the only time it's happened internationally, but it's the only time it's happened in my lifetime and in most lifetimes of most observers.
Not alone, but you're putting us there in the company of the Great Depression of Japan with a lost decade. That's incredibly painful. I mean, Americans must be scratching their heads today and thinking, what, can we go? Can we have a lost decade in this country? Is Argentina what we should be, worrying about? That kind of scenario, downsizing and consolidation don't sound comforting up against the scale of events we see unfolding here.
So there are multiple policy mistakes that contributed to those other episodes, and what we have to hope for is we don't get those same policy mistakes this time round. In the U.S. case, we learned something over the weekend. We learned two things. Mm. The scale and scope of government intervention is limited. Secretary Paulson and his colleagues tried to draw a line. Second, the underlying assets on some of those balance sheets weren't nearly as good as the management had hoped. And so when they looked around to find someone to take them over, they couldn't. And so the bankruptcy of Lehman is fundamentally about the securities Lehman's holding on its balance sheet and in its inability to find a buyer in current market environment. So the wealth loss associated with the decline in house prices also has to include the decline in securities prices.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the crisis on Wall Street. Bankruptcy, fire sale, bailout, meltdown. Nobody knows where it ends. I've been joined by Vincent Reinhart, former director of the Federal Reserve Board's Division of Monetary Affairs until 2007. Alan Sinai is with us, a 15-year veteran of Lehman Brothers, now chief global economist, strategist, and president of Decision Economics. We'll talk with business historian Nancy Kane in a few moments. Let's get some of our listeners' questions on the table here, if we may. Khalid in Atlanta, Georgia. Khalid, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, for several years, Alan Greenspan was touted as this like icon of economic thought, and I'm just wondering why in all of his tenure there did he not see any of this coming? That was my first question, and my second question was sort of attached to that, was we've been told by several Republican administrations that the market could just correct itself, and that, you know, we definitely, over-regulation could lead to a slowdown of the economy, but I wonder if that had been in place and things had been moving slower, if that could have slowed some of the chain reactions that led to this meltdown.
Very good questions, Khalid. Let us hold those and get one another. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Steve, you're on.
Hi, thanks a lot. I'm calling because, Lehman is in the news today, and it should be, but the larger issue is what's going on with the fiscal health of the country. This is your guest mentioned that a buyer couldn't be found for all of the bad assets on Wall Street. That's not true. The Fed is soaking this up. I mean, just last night they announced they were going to accept equities as collateral for giving out money. You ought to take some time to explain about how crazy that is. But the larger issue is what does this do for the fiscal health of the country? When you look at a historical context, great empires have not generally fallen through military defeat, but through insolvency and bad debt, which is what we're living through right now. So, this isn't the Japanese. This is the British or the Ottomans. And, none of the candidates are talking about this stuff. How secure is U.S. government debt? Nobody imagined this stuff happening a year ago. What are the dangers now with the Fed and with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury accepting all this bad paper and bailing out Fannie and Freddie, that the U.S. will be able to live up to its own debt obligations and not default in a year or two down the road?
Steve, great questions, and you put us maybe at the right scale there. Again, Vincent Reinhart, Alan Sana, Alan, first to you.
Yes, sir. First, Chairman Greenspan, inadvertently, I think the low interest rate policy of the Federal Reserve and in part the Bernanke Fed contributed to the excessive boom in housing and all of the growth of the credit and debt around that, which was a bubble waiting to burst, and it has burst. Regulation and supervision was lax, and that is in what was a great reign for Chairman Greenspan. That was it was too lax, letting the markets call the tune. And the question of markets. And the Republican administration comments, markets...
That is our caller from Atlanta say, wait a minute,
I'm
we've been told free markets were supposed to correct themselves. Is this what that looks like?
You know, up to a point, but markets do fail. And then the government has to step in and help out and do some cushioning and play a role through the markets. But markets do fail. And those kinds of comments from the Republican administration were as if markets can't fail. And they do, and they have, and we have seen that. On the health of the U.S. fiscal picture, I would not encourage the caller to think anything other than what his comments summarized. A bit panicky, a bit extreme in terms of the health of the U.S. fiscal position, but it's headed in the wrong direction. If we keep on going the way we're going, there will be a downgrade by rating agencies somewhere, sometime on U.S. Treasury debt. And then where we are all fleeing at the moment, which is U.S. Treasury debt because it's a safe haven, won't be such a safe haven. Now, we don't have to get there.
You put that in almost a Greenspanian circumlocution. You mean to say when he draws a parallel with the end of the British Empire and the Ottoman, he's on the right page?
I would not discourage him from thinking that. It's a bit extreme, a bit panicky. But as I look the global situation, who's getting rich, who's getting poor, the relative strength of economic powers around the world, the sands of time are not on the U.S. side at the moment. Now, the U.S. has always responded in a way that has changed what can be a very gloomy prospect for the long run, and I'm waiting to see, and I think that will happen. But the full faith and credit of the U.S. sovereign debt is on the line. It is good that they drew the line in the sand now. The private sector has to sort this out with government help. This is a private-public sector thing. Wall Street got us where we are. They're going to have to get themselves out of it, and I don't think we should have even intervened to help out Bear Stearns.
Vincent Reinhart, can Wall Street get us out of this? They kind of got us into this. Do you think the federal government will be able to hold the line on pouring more public money in here?
Perhaps not. I think what we're learning is that the financial firms at the core of our trading system need more capital. The capital may come from elsewhere in the private sector, or it could come from official entities like sovereign wealth funds.
That is foreigners.
That would be foreigners. But if it doesn't come from there, then ultimately it will come from the federal government in some sort of fiscal solution. Large banking crises historically and across countries tend to be resolved by a fiscal solution. And what that means is that the candidates running for office right now have to understand that their ambitions may very well be tempered by the need to provide funds to financial institutions through some resolution vehicle. That means the prospects for tax cuts or spending increases are much more iffy than previously thought.
Wow.
And I think Alan had the right point about let's not be too too negative. We have a political system in which thus far the United States veers away from the really bad course. That is, what this means is at some point down the road, politicians will have to appreciate the adverse debt dynamics. We'll have to appreciate that its resources are limited, and they'll have to rein in some of their other ambitions.
I mean, it sounds like we are staring some kind of giant downgrade right in the face, and I don't just mean arcane elements of the financial system. I want to bring another voice into this conversation. Joining us from Belmont, Massachusetts, Nancy Kane is with us, professor of business administration, Harvard Business School, author of Creating Modern Capitalism. Nancy, thanks for being here.
Pleasure, Tom.
You've got a historic perspective on business, capitalism, economies. I mean, you hear the kind of concerns that are out there in the world right now. You see the front page of the Wall Street Journal. I've never seen that before. Put this in a big context for us. Are we staring at some kind of national downgrade here? Is this the process? Are we on the slide right now?
We're in the midst of a serious weather front here at the high level of global capitalism. I would describe it the way one of my students once did, as the flywheel of really now a worldwide capitalism, a very interdependent system, is now spinning too fast for the system and all the actors that depend on it, billions of people, for its own good. That's really what we're talking about here. And I agree strongly with Alan and Vincent and Stephen from Cambridge that there's a large imperial issue here around America's place in the world order and how tied up that is with fiscal and financial and macroeconomic health. So we are really, yes, at a very important inflection point in capitalism, and we got there through the financial system and more particularly through the impact of the financial system, in this case the banking and the shadow banking system, on the global capital markets, which is new. It's new. It's not exactly like the Great Depression of 1931, because the banks we're talking about are really different entities than the sort of, you know, bricks and mortar, sturdy gray buildings that FDR, you know, and the Securities and Exchange Commission really tried to write in the aftermath of the Great Depression in 1930.
But this time, with the flywheel, as you say, spinning out of control of international capitalism, the United States doesn't have the capital, Vincent Reinhardt says, and it is obvious. I mean, this is a pretty disadvantageous position to be in at a moment of crisis.
Yes, it is. If you step back and look at it in a sort of, you know, large-scale theoretical frame. But I don't think that's where we are right now. I think this is about, you know, exigency and the functional need of the world economy to maintain stability. And in that context, America is the bet. It is still the bet, notwithstanding, right, the ebb and flow of empire. It is still the bet, and there are a whole lot of actors, institutional and individual, that have great stakes in keeping American treasuries sound right now, or sound enough to get the job done. And I really believe, from a historical standpoint, that center will hold.
Alan Sinai, you can imagine listeners thinking, wait a darn minute. For a decade and much more, we've been told these guys were brilliant, these enormous compensation packages that skewed the entire distribution of income in this country on Wall Street were justified by the efficiencies that they were bringing to the economy, by the way that new kinds of credit would help us grow and, you know, move toward a splendid future. And here it's dust, it's ashes, it's falling apart. There's billions in the public bailout already on the line here. I mean, what is wrong with this picture?
Tom, who told them that? I don't think Nancy.
Who told who what?
I don't think Nancy told them that. I don't think Vince told them that. I never told them that. What you just described is a bit like snake oil stuff that the sellers in the old Wild West used to sell. It's totally.
We're talking
totally. I hope maybe Americans believed that, and maybe those who promoted that believe that. But that is absolutely that stuff is wrong.
But it's been more or less the dogma of our national policy for a long time. Yeah. Are you kidding me? I've heard it right at this table. People saying these highly complex debt instruments were bringing great new efficiencies to our market. And yes, there was some risk, but they were going to take us to great places. That the free market. I mean, that's the whole George Bush line. The free market.
I'm not agreeing with that line. I think that those who were the sellers of that stuff, who made money from that stuff, telling the buyers to buy, and I would encourage all Americans to be very skeptical about what anybody tries to sell them, especially when it doesn't make common sense. And common sense in the case of the complex derivatives was the failure of people who ran companies in the business, not understanding what they were and how complex it had become. And the private sector arrangements of the swaps and the various complex derivatives that weren't even vetted by anything like an FDA. So I think, let me say here, that anybody who, and now I doubt that very many people would think that, because we're seeing the unwinding of an incredible boom and bubble in a number of dimensions. And it is part of a longer-run process, and what was conventional wisdom in this country, which is being shattered now. And I think the answer to where we get the capital is going to have to come in the United States from us. We're going to have to save more and spend less.
Out of our hides.
It's coming out of our hides. And that's what's been on the handwriting on the wall for a long, long time, for a country that's basically a big debtor country across most aspects of what we do. The Cassandra, you know, the doomsayers, the Cassandras, those who cried out about it, you know, at some point it happens if corrective action isn't taken before.
But it's here. You're not mocking them. You're saying
No. It's here. It's here. Not only did we not take corrective action, but we made it worse with the policies that went on in Washington, in my view.
Vincent, I hear you there.
So I just wanted to put 2 points perspective.
Please.
First is there really is an underlying economic loss. We built too many houses as a nation. House prices have to go down to clear that market. The problem is the mortgages that supported those housing transactions were the collateral, the raw material for finance. And they were put into securities that were complicated and held on entities that had very opaque balance sheet and used a lot of leverage. So we're seeing a multiple decline in the price of securities that were supported by the decline in underlying house values. First point. Second point to remember is we've been running a large current account deficit. That means we've been borrowing from abroad. Some ways we've been borrowing from abroad is selling foreigners those securities. This is not a U.S. institution problem alone. Financial institutions around the world also have losses associated with their mortgage-related securities.
But China's got a $1 trillion surplus buffer. We've got trillions in debt.
It's always better to have outstanding assets. That's true. But if you're looking, if you're going to tell a story about the decline of the U.S. empire, you also have to ask, who's going to take its place? And the fact is, with regard to financial markets, there are losses around the world. And with regard to financial assets, the U.S. still produces some of the best outstanding, that is the Treasury securities. The government this weekend drew a line and said there are limits to how much support we have to financial institutions. You should take that as good news about the extent to which the federal government will fiscalize the problem. I think ultimately there's going to have to be something like a resolution trust company. We're pointed in that direction. But the government has said—
That means more government intervention. A resolution trust company means putting a backstop in.
But it'll be more organized government intervention than just throwing a blanket safety net around investment banks.
Bill in Northborough, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Bill.
You started off the hour by asking rhetorically the question, who's responsible for this? Let's start with the people back in the Reagan administration who said, guess what? Government isn't the solution. It's the problem. So then that result is you had the relaxation of all sorts, or else the abolishment of all sorts of rules and regulations. And as a result, we had the savings and loan crisis, Enron, right now the mortgage crisis, a whole host of other major and minor financial problems. We don't have unfettered capitalism here. It's gone now to predation. This is where people, a select few, get the rake and the profits, and all the rest of us are responsible. You know, this responsibility for your actions, We get the penalty for the heartache, the losses, the agony, the loss of money or whatever that these people had made on profits. This is a situation that is totally man-made. We had a system before under Roosevelt where you had agencies that were working and making sure that these things didn't get out of hand. It was working, so what did we do? We tried to fix it.
Bill, in Northborough, thanks very much for your call. Nancy Cohn-Kane, it's just a few half a minute before the break, but you can imagine people watching this right now, ordinary folks who didn't make $10, $20, $40 million a year in the 90s and in this decade, looking out and saying, whoa, here comes the backwash and it's all on me, and that's real. That's pain.
It is, and it's a huge story. Over 100 million Americans own mutual funds, right? There's almost $10 trillion in assets in them. Huge numbers of people, unprecedented numbers of people, now have their financial security resting heavily on, guess what? Their 401ks, not company-provided pensions, and their homes. This is a big deal on Main Street.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the crisis on Wall Street. Bankruptcy for Lehman Brothers. Fire sale, bailout, meltdown. Nobody knows where it ends. Ellen Sinai is with me in the studio. Long time at Lehman Brothers, now at Decision Economics, chief global economist there. Vincent Reinhardt, long time director of the Federal Reserve Board's Division of Monetary Affairs. And Nancy Cohn is with us, professor at Harvard Business School, knows business history very well, and we are in the midst of it right now. George is calling from Burlington, Vermont. George, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Tom. Just a comment as I've been listening is let's not continue to call things capitalism anymore. It seems to be that indeed we become a consumerism society, and that's part of the problem. But my point was is everybody remembers that it was around 1983 that we began the institution called the 401k, and I think even as far back as then, they were worried about the working class fellow, the guy like me in the middle, that might have some struggles with Social Security as retirement time came.
Yeah.
And people like myself were given this vision that we could have a substantial nest egg with hard work and dedication and perseverance, which is what we've done. And what that did was took a stock market that was at the index of around 3,000 or maybe even less at the time,
yeah,
and moved it to a point of over 10,000, which was unprecedented. Well, the fact of the matter is that every week we put money in there, and every week, unfortunately, there's been individuals that are worried about what they're going to do with the ability to manipulate and be no restitution for the greed that has come about this. Sounds good on paper, but once again, the few are taking unprecedented liberties with people's hard work and their dedication. And that's because we're the first thing that happens when something is wrong. The television shows, they open the cash register in the shopping mall, and that's what we're going to do is spend our way out of it.
I wonder what gets consumed or who gets consumed this time. George, thanks for your call. Alan Sinai, what about it? You said snake oil, that the message of free markets riding themselves and, as George, our caller, says, jump in and join the party, was snake oil? This was presented as kind of bedrock economics to Americans, and Americans have counting on it for their livelihoods, their retirements, their savings?
No, the free markets do wonders in terms of the price mechanism and allocating resources in the right direction, the agents in the system sometimes run amok, and that's what's happened here. The rules really lagged the very clever people in the system in terms of inventing ways to make more money. And the promotion—
That didn't happen by accident.
No, of course not. That's what they're paid to do. Wall Street hires the brightest people out of the best—
But the rules themselves, the rules were taken down. Glass-Steagall was set aside. The investment banks were invited onto commercial banking terrain by our government, by our representatives.
I think that probably was okay. But what happened the last 5 or 8 years with housing prices soaring and low interest rates— were a lot of very clever innovations in the system that allowed people to use the equity in that asset to an extreme degree, and lots of businesses grew up around it. And that's where the supervisors, regulators, there's no FDA in our system to vet new medicines, and all those medicines were sold, and everybody was kind of asleep, and it got out of hand. Now, we have lots of these things in our history. This is just a very big form of the problem. This is the greed, the kind of thing that goes on in capitalism all the time. I'm very much for free market capitalism, but it gets out of hand. There are market failures, and there needs to be some management of it. That's part of the problem that we had. Just one point about consumers. We already see now, we're 6 quarters into a major, major slowdown in the growth of consumer spending. So as we speak, the discipline of what's going on is affecting us, and we are cutting back, and we will end up having to save more whether we like it or not, and that ultimately in the long run will be part of the regeneration of savings in our society. I fully expect our politicians to change a lot of their views, and as Vince said, they can't go on with some of the plans they have in light of what's going on. We have to be a much more disciplined society now with respect to our future.
Well, Vince Rentout, let me ask you about that. I mean, this is a lot of high economics, a lot of high policy, but you know it translates at family kitchen tables into a lot of pain. You're at the American Enterprise Institute, conservative organization there, been pushing a free market line for a long time, less regulation. When you look forward now, do you find yourself doing some recalculation of what this country needs if we're facing a crisis on the scale that everybody on our panel today and beyond is saying we are?
I think there's no question we need better regulation. I don't know whether it's more or less. What this is a market failure induced in part by poorly aligned incentives. And some of that comes from regulation and regulatory failures. We got 50 state bank regulators. We've got 4 federal bank regulators.
But you know what direction regulation and oversight has been headed in ever since the Reagan years? Down.
I mean, But there's a complete unwillingness for the last two decades on both political parties to touch the government-sponsored enterprise, Fannie and Freddie. And as a nation, we provide a lot of support to housing and the mortgage market.
Right.
And so at the root, this is a housing problem that has then gotten reflected and magnified by problems at securities firms.
You know what? I don't think that's true. At the root, I think it's more that housing was the fruit getting squeezed here. But people have gone in lots of directions. Yeah, that's where the problem is. But isn't it an attitude? I mean, Nancy Kane, housing was available to be worked over and exploited, and now it's exploded. But it seems to me that Americans have a right to ask now, what's the perspective that got us into this pickle?
I disagree, Vince, that at the root this is a housing problem. That may be where this starts. But what has happened is that because of the very things that we've been talking about, the way those assets became collateralized and became complex, the combination of that, the creation of new securities in the wake of the repeal of Glass-Steagall, that combination has greatly increased the systemic risk. If this was a game about commercial banks buying and trading mortgages in a housing bubble, this situation just wouldn't be as widespread and as turbulent and potentially dangerous as it is. So I think what we see here is the evolution of financial capitalism married to a bedrock American ideal about owning a home. And the historic government support of that ideal and the macroeconomic benefits of Americans owning homes. So this is really at a large-scale level a big, big deal. And it's not the first time that the wheel has moved ahead, right, of its own good, spun too fast, and then with a lag, regulators and the government have to figure out how to deal with this more accurately, right, because regulation always lags the system.
Nancy, this is going to be even more pronounced this time. This was an egregious form of using other people's money. I think the people on the East Coast saw that play in New York, where you use other people's money, invent things, sell them, sell off the risk so the people who do this have no risk. Americans are going
and make Americans, millions and millions and millions.
Oh, absolutely. And Americans are figuring it out. Part of the interest to me of this show is watching you, Tom, react as I shot at what was gospel coming out of conventional wisdom.
Well, you called it snake oil, but it was presented as wisdom to Americans who bought it and have invested in it, and it's not a joke,
understand.
And they're going to pay, and their kids will pay,
yes.
And their shoes will be old.
Yes.
It's not funny.
No, it's not at all. Not at all, and it is happening now, and it's going to be worse. The unemployment rate, we think, will go to 7% in this country, and we're in the midst, we think, of moving into a global recession. Americans are going to figure this out. And we're going to have a very big change that will show up in the ballot box. And the regulatory and supervisory environment, after all of this is done, is going to change quite radically. It may get too extreme, as we have done in our history. But Americans are going to figure out that they had the wool pulled over their eyes and that they really got the short end of the stick. And I am very concerned about how our society is going to react to that.
Nancy Kane, John McCain saying now in Florida that we've got to overhaul what he called the Republican candidate called the outdated and ineffective patchwork quilt of regulatory oversight in Washington. Does it make a difference which party's in power? We know who's had the White House for a lot of this time, who kind of set this tone. When you look at Obama and McCain and the path in front of us, Nancy, how do you look at the choices that American voters are going to have to make relative to this crisis?
Well, two responses. One is it'll be very interesting to see how voters respond to this particular moment and the system so close to a dangerous edge. That's the first comment. Second comment is historically and at a very large level, you know, Democratic administrations have historically been much more, you know, interested in trumpeting the value of government regulation. But the issue, I don't think, is more or less government regulation qua regulation. It's the nature of the regulation, and it's simply going to have to involve the private sector as well as government agents.
What do you mean by that? Self-policing?
Well, one of the fascinating things about this is that even the smartest CEOs didn't know, right, exactly what was on their balance sheet. Imagine asking Howard Schultz of Starbucks, how many stores do you have? Right, and him not knowing the answer.
Yeah, but they knew the money they were taking home. It was tens, hundreds of millions. Yeah,
absolutely.
So
Tom,
who cared?
I'm not condoning this in any way, shape, or form. I'm talking about an extraordinary, right, in some sense, you know, failure of leadership. And there are many complex reasons for that. But there's also the simple reason that these things were so complicated. And literally, people were asleep at the wheel for a long time.
But how can private industry finance be now expected to fix that?
Because they have as big a stake as you and I on Main Street in making this in getting the system away from this precipice and ensuring to the best of their ability that it doesn't happen again.
But maybe they're just on an island in the Caribbean this morning in a $20 million mansion, and, you know, good luck, America.
I'd be interested in hearing what Vince and Alan have to say about this, but my own experience with very high-level bankers and investment bankers is that a whole lot of people are incredibly concerned about this.
Well, because they might have to sell half of their Greenwich estate, Vince? I mean, can the country really count on this industry to fix itself after, you know, what we've seen?
We need capital from wherever we can get it, and some of it will come from within the financial system. Some of it will come from abroad, and some of it will come from the U.S. government. It's going to be a joint effort. I think it is very clear we got multiple incentive problems associated with the way we financed housing. There's no question about that. From the very beginning, about who a realtor really works for, to the appraiser, to the mortgage broker, to the rating agency, to the final investor. People were not taking responsibility. Payments, you know, incomes were divorced from the outcome of the decisions they were making. And we're living with the result.
Who do you trust fix it, Republicans or Democrats? Voters are going to have to decide. You're with a conservative outfit, but what do you think?
I think we're going to have to, wherever we wind up, whichever party is in power, we're going to have to come up with fewer types of financial institutions, more consolidation on the balance sheet, and more capital. And that's across investment banks and commercial banks. You've been complaining about Glass-Steagall, but I think as Alan opened the show, the point is we leveled the playing field for commercial banks and investment banks, and the guys who are standing at the end are the ones who have more capital, the commercial banks.
And gentlemen, we're simply going to have a better way of risk monitoring and risk management here. That has got to be part of the next chapter.
Alan Sina, Republicans or Democrats more likely to make that happen in an effective way?
I got to be careful.
You've worked with both.
I think
voters are sitting here and have to make a choice.
But I'm holding my own choice for a little bit of time to see how those who are running respond to all of this.
How much evidence do we need?
I mean, as a citizen, I am not encouraged by what I see. I'm happy. I think the system produced two very good candidates, two solid vice presidential candidates. And the presidential candidates, to me, are not yet really stepping out and tackling this problem, financial crisis, economy, and jobs.
Think it's a good fit for Sarah Palin's experience?
I don't make comments.
You said it was two solid vice presidential candidates, and we're facing economic crisis. Do you think it's a good fit for experience as governor of Alaska?
I don't think she's got the experience to pin me down on this to be a president. If in an urgent situation, if she had to be president, I think I wouldn't. I'd be a little nervous about that. I don't think she's got a long enough period of experience. We'll see whether she can get that in a couple of months. I actually doubt it. But getting back, that's number one problem. Number two is energy. They're not really leading us on energy.
Who's they?
Those are our presidential candidates. Mm-hmm. We don't have a call to arms, a call to mission on dealing with energy in a very big way.
Is that related to this meltdown?
Of course it is, because energy and higher crude oil and energy prices are giving us recession and inflation at the same time, and they are complicating what the Federal Reserve does and helping to make those assets on the balance sheets of these financial institutions worth less and are part of the bust in housing that was the catalyst for all this beginning. We're now going through a very tough period in the stock market. So that asset, as an asset at risk, as a asset deflation with stuff levered around that, it's not so much the subprime now. That's in the background. That got it going.
Yep.
We're now at the heart of a very, could be a very, very bad equity bear market. We've been in this bear market for almost a year. So we're not through with all of this asset deflation.
Nancy, can John McCain at the head of the GOP turn this ship, the ship that's on the rocks here?
I think it'll be very difficult.
Why?
Very difficult.
He says he's a maverick.
Yes, and that's and that is his part of his political pitch. But there are a whole lot of forces lined up in the Republican Party, in the chips he owes to different folks, and in his very leadership style and qualities that I think make that a real hard slog.
Vince?
I think you should not worry about there being too little regulation coming out of the Congress next year. You should worry that the regulation actually is controlled and coherent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's a decision both in terms of who's in the White House and who's on the Hill. And so there are some advantages and there are some disadvantages of a divided government.
Wow. What a pass. We're just going to have to watch this one unfold, but I'm sorry to hear how unpretty each of you expects it to be. Vince Reinhart at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, thank you very much for joining us today, Vince.
Thank you.
Nancy Kane at the Harvard Business School. Nancy, thanks for being here.
Pleasure, Tom.
And Alan Sinai, Chief Global Economist, Strategist, and President of Decision Economics, Inc. Alan, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Good luck.